Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast. I'm your host, James Coker, along with Ash Vandelay. Hi, Ash.
Hello.
Today, we are reviewing the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. We also have a little bit of a mailbag situation, WTF1 mailbag, where we're going to be answering some of the comments and questions that you might have for us. So let's just get right into it, yeah?
Yeah, I really like this one. And this is all in good jest. I'm assuming because these comments were nice, but we do read all of them, and I will say we do talk about some criticism, some questions that we get, and we can address a lot of them. Some we just can't, and we just can't win. So the first one is my favorite, and Ash talks too fast. Shout out to Anne on Spotify. She has been begging me to slow down for episodes. And I'm so sorry, Anne. I've recently started reading the comments. And she 100% nailed it. I talk fast when I get excited about stuff. It's always something I have been told that I do. And I am so sorry. I can give you my mom's email. And you can bitch to her about it. Or with her about it. As that is a common thing that my mom has. But then she speaks really fast in Polish. So I think it's a genetic thing. So no. I will definitely be more conscious about it. I do get excited and speed up, but funny enough, I did go to executive speech person trainer, and when they
to said, slow yourself down,
to slow myself down, to just learn how to publicly speak better. This was for a job a couple ages back in my day.
It's so interesting because I love that you go for speed. Like, I love talking fast, and I think I go for speed for everything in my life. The way I eat, I eat like an entire plate of food in 3 bites. Like,
I'm going for efficiency. I do listen to podcasts at 2x. Speed. YouTube videos. I hate that F1 TV does not allow me to watch race replays at 2x.
That's why they give you the race in 30.
I need that at 2x. I don't have 30. I have 15. So I'm just going to need for them to give it to me. But no, I will understand. And I could slow down. And you guys can speed it up as you need. And I will do my best to be conscientious of it. So shout out to Anne. Thank you so much. And I'm so sorry I've made you listen for this long without addressing it. My apologies. There was a fun one. And I find it fun because of the word that was used. It said that I use this podcast to air my grievances. And I want everyone to know Vandelay is, obviously or not obviously, not my last name. It is a reference to the TV show called Seinfeld. A character, George Costanza, when he has to give a fake name, he uses the name Art Vandelay. So I just use that name Vandelay for my Twitch name, which is how I kind of got started 4 years ago, talking about F1 publicly. Funny enough, in the TV show Seinfeld, there's a fake holiday called Festivus. And during Festivus, they do something called the airing of grievances. And I just love that they said that I use this podcast to air my grievances. And I was like, wow, this really came full circle here. This
do
was
they
a great
say
moment.
Festivus for the rest of us? Is that what they
do? Festivus for the rest of us. Yeah. Yes. But, you know, we can work on being more positive. I hear you. I understand.
Listen. That's one person's opinion. I love it when you air your grievances. I love when you talk about what grinds your gears.
Someone said I say, what are we doing here too much? And I didn't realize that till they said that. I like took a step back and I was like, oh my gosh. They have a very good point.
No, I think it's great. It's like your catchphrase.
No, I don't. Like you pull the string and just like, what are we doing here? Just in my little action figure. We definitely read everything. And I appreciate when you guys mention like, hey, can you slow down talking? You know, blah, blah, blah. And we get it. We understand. And we appreciate when you do say something, though. You also have to understand we get both sides of the spectrum. We've been told that our hot takes aren't actually hot and we're really boring. And then we've also been told that this podcast is only hot takes and we talk about no racing. So like in those instances, we can't win.
I feel like
so we're
we talk
keep
a
doing
lot
what we're
about
doing.
Racing, but...
We're just gonna keep doing what we're doing in that case, right? Like, that's maybe that is a hot take. Shout out to Jill on Instagram. She DM'd me and she said she was really excited when I mentioned cycling. Her and her dad actually went to France to watch the Tour de France in 23. And I think there's a lot of us. We just have to find other cycling fans. I know they're, I guess, a little rarer in the United States, but shout out to Jill for DMing me, letting me know. There's a Netflix show called Unchained about the 2023 and 2024 Tour de France. So, if anyone's interested, as the Tour de France is going to get started in a couple months and want to get into cycling, maybe look at the top flyers. But Jill, thank you so much for your DM. I appreciate that. And we'll be rooting for, I think, hopefully the same people.
Not Woot?
No, my boy Tade. He has so much to do. Oh, gosh, there's no one who's as good as him. That's the problem on his team. No one wants to be a number two cyclist. The same thing in Formula One. No one wants to be a number two driver. No one wants to be the number two cyclist to help Tade get up there. So he's always by himself. Okay, yeah. Whatever. Sorry, we'll talk about this when we get to the tour. Tara on Spotify mentioned her local racetrack was Daytona. She actually went in high school, and she signed the Speedway. For those of you who may or may not know, you can actually sign your name on the start-finish line at NASCAR races. Like, they open it up, and you can go with your own permanent Sharpie. You can sign, write something, draw a heart or whatever. So she did that in high school when she went on her trip. And that kind of came from my push at the end of every episode to support local, including your local racetracks. So, for example, just Googling Daytona Speedway calendar, they have a huge concert series coming up where it's like I Prevail, Three Doors Down, Green Day. If you're into that kind of music, like that's what Daytona has. They also have a bunch of runs, I think 5Ks, 10Ks scheduled for the American Heart Association, one for Thanksgiving. Everyone loves a turkey trot. Just kidding, not me. And of course, there's racing with IMSA, NASCAR, Supercross. They have a motorcycle show happening. So yeah, just Google your local track and see what they got for you.
For sure.
I'm a big fan of that. Charlotte Motor Speedway does movies. I know during the holiday season, they play movies that you can do a drive-in kind of situation. I don't know about this summer. I'll have to look into that. They had a fair recently at the Speedway, which was, who doesn't love, I love funnel cake.
A regular fair or like a Ren fair?
Oh, no, like a fair. Oh, like a regular fair. Which is interesting because I thought fairs were like a summer thing in my head. I don't know why I thought that. Yeah. But they had a fair, Ferris wheel, you know, the water guns, the things. Interesting enough, someone said we also go off topic a lot, but I actually like that, so I'm not addressing
it. I did too. Yeah.
Seth on to Spotify.
To quote the song from the film The Greatest Showman, This Is Me.
And Seth on Spotify says he actually does like the comparisons and talks about other sports and athletes. So I appreciate that, Seth. So, yeah.
Shout out, Seth Ritter.
Yeah, so I appreciate everyone commenting either on Spotify. I can't read the Apple comments. I'm a boomer. I don't know what's going on there.
I also have one thing I do want to say.
Okay.
Michael on Spotify said 100% of Albert Park Circuit is used as a public road during this year. It's a street circuit in every sense. And I have one tiny rebuttal. Yes, but significant portions of the modern layout of Albert Park were built specifically for the Grand Prix. So food for thought.
Nah, I'm on his side with this one. I'm sorry, James. You're going to be voted off the island between me and Michael here. We're not doing this whole debate if it's a street or a track. What do we call it? A treat? A street?
Listen, I'm just, you know, call me a scarecrow because I'm full of straw man arguments.
That's obviously you. But yeah, no, guys, we do love when you either DM. Well, I like it when you DM me nicely. Regardless if you disagree with us or not, that's fine. Like, if you want to talk about V10s and why they're the best things since sliced bread, politely, without calling me names, that's totally fine. I'm happy to hear.
Also, I want to say, there was a review recently saying that I was mocking the Bring Back V10s podcast, which I absolutely was not. I made a joke because Ashley went on a rant about V10s, and I said, this is a great time to plug the race media podcast Bring Back V10s a joke. And I actually listened to Bring Back V10s. I think it's a wonderful podcast, and in no way I was mocking it. So
I think you're mocking. Oh, I hope you're mocking the name because I hate V10s. So the name was Bring Back V10s. So that was the whole
show. I was making the joke that on a podcast that is owned by the Race Media, I was then plugging a podcast titled Bring Back V10s that's on the Race Media. But I think it's a great podcast. And I like Karun Shandok a lot. And I think the hosts are wonderful. They talk about the history of Formula One and they take like very specific singular moments and talk about it. So if you haven't listened to it, go listen to it.
Yeah. So yeah, we read everything, or most. Again, I can't read the Apple comments.
And we're human beings with feelings, so be nice.
Yeah. But yeah, we're happy to talk to you. Please keep sending in any questions, comments, concerns, something you want to also talk more about. We will address it in the WTF1 mailbag. So we appreciate it. I think it's the most comments we've seen recently. So I'm gonna shout you out. There's been like three episodes where she's like, Ashley is too fast. I'm like, oh man, she's been pleading, and I appreciate that.
But if you like what you hear, or if you have some criticism, please just shoot us a comment either in the video, shoot us a comment on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen.
We're just like motorsports.
But yeah,
I'm afraid to say the next thing. It's like no one has said that we don't know anything. I was like, this would go really wrong. Well,
I don't know anything. I'm a professional dumbass. That's why I'm here. You know a lot. I'm just a fan, but you're an expert.
I wouldn't go that far. I think we're just
okay. You're a knowledgeable fan. Let's put it that way.
And we're just here to have a good time, guys. So
I'm a dumbass. So here we go. Let's talk about Saudi Arabia in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Yes, king, right? Yes. Do they say that in Saudi, in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia? Yes, king? No? Anyway, we'll do a quick Kuwali recap. Quick recap of qualifying. Another Q3 appearance for Pierre Gasly, Yuki Tsunoda, solid qualifying for Carlos Sainz as well. We had Max Verstappen on pole, Oscar Piastri P2, George Russell P3. Unfortunately, Lando Norris starting P10 on the grid after crashing out of Q3.
Yeah, I mean, the internet did its thing with what they wanted to do there, which was either both sides of the extreme. He had a lot to not prove. I don't want to say that. Just he was pushing himself, and that makes sense.
Pressure was there.
Pushed himself. It happened. I'm glad he's okay.
And we'll talk about this later. Had a great recovery drive. Happy finishing P4 after starting P10 on the grid. We'll talk about that a little later. But let's get into the race, shall we?
We shall.
Okay, great. Broad strokes. I personally think the race was fine. There was a lot of excitement up top, especially the first lap. But I think as a whole, the race was kind of anticlimactic. You might have a counterpoint to that. I'd say from like a scale 1 to 10, I'm giving the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix a 6.5.
I give it a solid 7. I just like watching the cars.
Sure. Before we get into it, let's talk real quick. Piastri got P1, Verstappen P2, Leclerc P3, Norris P4, Russell P5. Every car, P1 through 9 on the starting grid, started on mediums with Lando Norris opting to start on hard tires. Verstappen and Piastri, of course, went wheel to wheel on turn one. The commentators on F1 TV claim Piastri had the corner as Verstappen passed Oscar on the track. Max and Red Bull chose not to give the position back. My question for you, Ash, was that stubbornness on Red Bull and Max Verstappen's part, or the desire to have clean air in hopes of building a big enough cushion where the penalty was worth taking?
I mean, why not both?
Well, it could be both. You're right.
Well, yeah. We'll kind of dive back and forth, because I know there's been a lot of debate about this, but I think there's a lot of nuance that we're also not seeing, because I know people are saying and quoting sporting regulations according to the FIA document, but that was for Max's just taking advantage off track, quote unquote. The actual clarity on rules is not published anywhere, and that's the issue.
Interesting.
They've actually changed it this year to talk more about the defending driver has to do than the attacking driver, quote unquote. Wow. But according to John Noble and the race, it's meant to be in the sporting code. But there's been so much back and forth on it that that's not actually been published just yet. So yeah. We'll get into that in a second.
Of course, Max Verstappen made the defense that he was forced off, didn't want to give the position back, was eventually given a 5-second time penalty. We have the safety car ending on lap 3. Interesting element for race strategy for Jeddah, which we did not talk about in the preview, is that on average, around 19 seconds is lost for every pit stop at Jeddah, when on some tracks, it's like 30 seconds.
I think usually on average, it's between 21 and like 23, 25 seconds. 21 seconds is what you do. Oh, okay, yeah. I'm not saying there's not more.
There's some where it's like more. But I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. Piastri decided to let pit lap 20. It was a slower pit stop over 3 seconds, switched from medium to hards, comes out of the pit P6. Piastri eventually regained the race lead after Norris pitted lap 35 to switch from hards to schmediums. Norris rejoined the race P5. Piastri ended up maintaining the race lead of approximately like 5 seconds or so for the remainder of the race. We then, of course, had Leclerc overtake George Russell on lap 38 for P3. And there was a very funny radio exchange that happened between Charles Leclerc and his race engineer, Brian Bossi, where Brian just said, "Well done, Charles." And then kind of in like a mocking tongue-in-cheek tone, Leclerc goes, "Thank you, Brian," which I thought was great. But we'll get into some storylines after this. But once again, Piastri P1, Verstappen P2, Leclerc P3, with Norris with a pretty good comeback drive of P4 starting from P10. Let's talk storylines. Yeah?
Yeah.
We have a three-way fight for the Drivers' Championship now. I mean, you couldn't argue maybe four because it's still early on, because you still have Russell in striking distance.
Agreed.
And for it. But after his win for McLaren, Oscar Piastri is the first Australian to lead the World Drivers' Championship since Mark Webber. Following the 2010 Japanese Grand Prix, we have Oscar Piastri in first place with 99 points, 3 wins, 4 podiums. Norris in second with 89 points, one win, four podiums. Verstappen in third, 87 points, one win, three podiums. Yes, Oscar is in the lead. We've had five rounds so far. Do you think Oscar Piastri is winning the World Drivers' Championship this year?
I love that question, because you know that's just like a clickbait rage question.
100%.
You're just like, what are you doing here?
100%.
Not even that many races in. And you're asking me, switch it up. You thought Lando, now is Oscar going to win? I mean, if we're doing that chart, no one watches baseball, but if we're doing that chart that shows the statistics of someone winning, right, during a baseball game, it's so fun because anything can change at a dime. So for the third game between Yankees and Tampa, like Yankees had a 99% chance of winning, and then all of a sudden Tampa scored like a butt ton of runs, and that just dropped down to like 15, and it sucked.
Totally.
In this case right now, Piastri is in that upward trajectory of, yes, winning the WDC. If it stands as it stands, of him just being consistent. We're also banking on Lando Norris consistently doing mistakes, which we're looking for patterns. I understand that will potentially keep occurring, whether it's during the race or qualifying. So do I think he's winning? I'm not going to go into a Stephen A. Smith debate of yelling that that's definitely going to happen. But yeah, it is likelihood. It's still between those three. With sure. It has to be it's McLaren's to lose, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Which McLaren it is, I think we're going to talk to in a second about storylines of McLaren still not picking number one driver, considering Zach's post-race interview with Laura Winter. It was so interesting. He's like, oh, yeah, we have great two number one drivers. It's so convenient, so interesting. They're both great. And Laura was like, okay, but like, what are you doing? She's being very professional, but he was just not answering the question of. And I think we all think, and that's been a constant reoccurring theme of, we think that's going to bite them in the ass sooner than later.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little later with McLaren. But, I mean, it seems to be, unless something disastrous happens, McLaren has the constructors' title in the bag. They already have a huge lead over Mercedes in second place. McLaren with 188 points, Mercedes with 111 points. And if they continue to have double podiums and or finish, like, have both cars finish in P1 to P5 range, like, there's nothing stopping them at this point. I think it's really exciting. I think we're, you know, I think we're getting a version of what we had last season, maybe a little ramped up, maybe a little closer in the fight for the Drivers' Championship. So I'm excited to see how the rest of the season plays out.
I do still think we have the issue of it being, I think that someone put this greatly, this is a dirty air championship.
Yeah.
That's still going to be a reoccurring thing with the variable of the Pirelli tires, which we'll get to.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about this part that I'm highlighting right here, or do we want to move on?
Yeah, why not?
I just thought it was interesting. I was looking at the times in the race. We had Max like 4 or 5 seconds behind Piastri, Leclerc 6 seconds behind Max, Norris 2 seconds behind Leclerc, and so on and so on. Then you had Mercedes kind of on this like P5, P6 island, where Russell was 10 plus seconds behind Lando Norris, Antonelli was 13 seconds behind Russell, and then Hamilton was 2 seconds behind Kimi Antonelli. What I'm trying to say is that like P1 through 7 were kind of like bunched up together, and then you had Carlos Sainz in P8, 24 plus seconds behind Lewis Hamilton in P7. I think it was just such a great representation of the disparity between the top four teams and the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
And to quote Ash, what are we doing?
Oh, no. Just make it a T-shirt.
Yeah, and I know like when we watch qualifying, the cars are pretty close together. But when it comes to race pace and
the difference is fun to see. Yeah.
It's just the difference between what the top four teams are able to pull off in those cars as opposed to the midfield. It's just like the gap is so huge.
Yeah, race pace is huge. And if anyone sim races, specifically in iRacing, the qualifying is always fun. And then you realize someone has zero racing etiquette. And they're actually terrible at racing with a pack. So they can qualify P1, and then all of a sudden they finish the race like P14. Qualifying is one game, which I appreciate that a Formula One weekend, or just a motorsport weekend, because everyone's got to qualify. Mm-hmm. Qualifying is one part of it, and then the race is the other, with the strategy and the management, et cetera. Not saying there's no strategy in qualifying, but how it plays out for the race is a lot more interesting.
Yeah. It's a great time to remind you that this episode of the WTF1 podcast is brought to you by NordVPN. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/WTF1podcast. That's nordvpn.com/WTF1podcast. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is also in the podcast episode description. Now, you might be asking yourself, why do I need a VPN? Y'all, I'm so glad you asked. There's a number of reasons, but first of all, watching sporting events, TV shows, and films which aren't available in your region, I switch my virtual location to a country which is allowing or showing the event. I also use NordVPN to protect my private data like bank details, passwords, and my online identity. Get premium cybersecurity for the price of a cup of coffee per month. One NordVPN account can be used for up to 10 devices. We're talking phone. We're talking second phone. We're talking laptop. We're talking tablet. The possibilities are endless. I also use it to protect myself from viruses, malicious malware, and phishing sites using the threat protection feature. So make sure to sign up for NordVPN by going to nordvpn.com/WTF1podcast. That's nordvpn.com/WTF1podcast. Let's move on to some storylines of the team. Lance Stroll recently broke the record for most Q1 exits. I believe that was previously held by Kevin Magnussen. He was quoted in the interview afterwards, put the McLaren drivers in the Sauber for 10 years and they will have the most Q1 exits. It's car dependent. I think it's very interesting that he said Sauber and he didn't quote his own team. He didn't quote Aston Martin or Williams or Racing Point.
For some perspective, Stroll's teammates have 47 Q1 exits to his 75, 74 Q3 appearances to his 40. So, I mean, just to say it's just the machinery. A little disingenuous, but we're trying to be more positive. You know, we're just
a little bit of a stretch.
Sure, it's the Aston Martin isn't the best, but...
Yeah. I think we do need to remind people that Lance Stroll is a good driver. Hear me out.
Okay.
F3 champion, like... And yes, he had a ton of advantages in Formula 3, but he won Formula 3 by like twice as many points as anyone else. I think he had like 512 points and second place had like 260 or something like that. Dominated in karting and lower series. Is a good driver. Is good but enough to be in Formula
1. This is a
one.
Debate that we need to have in yes. a separate compass. What 100%. Makes someone a good driver?
Yes. Sure. But, and I know people love like hating on Lance Stroll, but you are right. The numbers don't lie when you compare him to his teammates.
His Q1 exit for this race wasn't egregious either. He was like a tenth off. What was it? Within a tenth of Fernando Alonso? Like the deficit wasn't by seconds. Sure. So for this weekend, it was just like, yeah, he just had to just do a little more. But then at this point, someone's also asking, how much longer do we also need to give Lance Stroll to keep up with his teammates?
He's going to get as long as he wants.
Yeah, well, yes.
Until he wants to leave. I think... Yeah, we can.
No one's talking about this actually as much as this is a constant. You just go back and forth.
We can constantly have this conversation, but I think he's eventually going to, and I think we're kind of seeing it happen. We've seen it happen slowly over the years, but I think he's falling out of love with racing and will eventually get bored and leave.
Yeah,
and I think maybe it might not just be that he is falling out of love with racing. I think he's falling out of all the other stuff that comes along with.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
having
a lot
to be a Formula One driver, all the other obligations that you have to do, especially your availability for media and all that, all the attention on you, all that stuff. But let's move on. Let's talk Red Bull.
Everyone's favorite subject this weekend.
This time, Horner had it printed out.
Classic.
Remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Check out say the cause. Fuck. I have it printed out. This time Horner had it printed out. Red Bull T-Principles Christian Horner printed out onboard images to dispute max 5-second penalty to the press.
Sure. Let's kind of dive into the penalty. This is going to be hard for people to agree that I'm going to attempt as neutral as possible. Yes, I have been paid by Red Bull before. Yes, I do really like Oscar Piastri. Did someone call me British on Instagram today and they said they will no longer follow me? Also, yes, which is strange.
That's hilarious.
Because what part of my accent gave it away? There's no winning. Okay, so this is factual. Piastri had a better start than Verstappen. See it on the telemetry. Better start. Do we know if Verstappen had a better start, he would have been ahead of Piastri in the corner? That would have changed things, according to what I'm about to read, as the FIA has claimed, potentially. So Piastri had a better start. The run to turn one isn't particularly long, but it's enough for Piastri to kind of edge ahead and claim that inside line, right? Verstappen had no room. He had to cut across the curb. The incident was reviewed. It was clear to the stewards that Piastri held that corner at the apex, and Verstappen was handed a 5-second penalty for gaining an advantage off track. Now, according to John Noble from The Race, a great journalist, if you ever read any of his articles, 10 out of 10 recommend. And this
formerly
has been
of Motorsport, now The Race Media.
He and other journalists have also talked about this before when it's been Verstappen and Lando Norris and all the incidents that Verstappen may or may not have caused. They operate under driving guidelines, which are not public. The media do not know what they are. However, John says they can kind of discern what they're looking at according to the conversation that they have post-race. So there are potentially 4 criteria that the stewards were looking at. Again, this is not 100% known. These guidelines are not published anywhere, which is, I think, an issue. But okay. We'll talk about that in a second. So 1, Piastri's front axle was along Verstappen's mirror. The car has to also be driven under control, as in overtaking is going to happen. You're not just full sending it and you're going to completely miss that corner and yeet someone off. Mm-hmm. You can't deliberately push your competitor off track, which according to the stewards, Max and Oscar Piastri were side by side, and Max was side by side voluntarily, as it is explained by John. Also, you have to keep your own car on track. On turn one, Piastri was in track limits. So, according to that criteria, Piastri fulfilled that. And Verstappen was heading off track himself. Now, folks will say that Piastri gave him no room. That is also, I understand that. That's what I think Horner's also saying, that Max was ahead, actually, not Piastri at certain parts. He's saying that he wants clarity from the FAA, but he's not going to do an official right to review against the penalty. But he does want more clarity from the FAA, which this is one of those nuanced conversations. Mm-hmm. If, for me personally, now this is obviously not going to be opinion-based, if the roles were reversed, Max did the same thing, I'd be 100% fine if it played out the same exact way. I do understand that because it is Max Verstappen, we are getting these just intense biases. I also, the TV broadcast, I go back and forth, like, do I want their opinions on this? Because some folks said that Sky was really harsh, and I don't know if that's true. I watch F1 TV. F1 TV was pretty like, hey, that was Piastri's corner. Verstappen has the advantage. They gave him a 5-second penalty. Okay, we're moving on. There's been a lot of back and forth on if broadcasters really need to be like, oh, that was completely Max's fault. Like, how dare he try that? And I was like, yeah. Your job is just to call the race. You don't have to be like, what is he doing here? What are we... So if the roles were reversed, I would have been fine with Oscar getting a 5-second penalty if we're going to be consistent. The next thing is that Liam Lawson received a penalty as well, which I also have to look into because he did, I think, fully overtake Doohan, but then he went off track. And I think folks are saying that it wasn't considered a complete overtake till the next corner and you held it in within the racing lines, but he received a 10-second penalty. So I'm like, okay. Is there consistency as we move on from incident to incident? Now, how does the FIA review incidents? That we also do not know. Supposedly, they do look at previous calls, previous stewarding decisions, but based on the kind of corner it is, and of course the race day, that is also decided on the spot. It is huge variables. There's nothing, they say it's hard to be consistent on calls, and there's so many things that are happening while it is occurring, right? Max had a bad start. We have Piastri, his front axle aligned with the mirror when it happened. I'm not sure what cameras they're using. Is there an overhead that we don't know about that we don't see? Because I know Horner bought one picture of an onboard of Max, and then people are using the F1 TV onboard camera or whatever to like kind of dispute this thing. It's just, if we're going to be consistent, sometimes Max received penalties, sometimes he didn't. This has been a constant issue of, are we being consistent? We just need clarity. If there's, what do we want? Like, I understand why they don't want them public, as fans will use it, I guess, in the media to draw their own conclusions, and we don't want trial by social media. But there was also no room for Max to turn left if he wanted to stay on track. What's the criteria of leaving enough space? It's just, and then people would say, well, he could have slotted in behind Piastri. It's like, yeah, but if we're saying they're side by side and we're letting them race, it's just like a whole gray area. Racing rules, again, were changed for this year. For specifically, I think I mentioned earlier, the defending driver, more so talking about what they have to do. They're also for the attacking driver. It's meant to be in the sporting code, according to John Noble. But there's been a lot of back and forth and not officially published yet. And I think, and I do appreciate this gray area of Horner, like, yeah, he's doing his receipts thing, whatever. We have our thoughts about Christian Horner. But yeah, I want clarity on this. Like,
yeah.
Because the ruling for the 5-second penalty on Max Verstappen, which is gaining an advantage off track, that had nothing to do with Piastri leaving enough space. And then David Coulthard mentioned this, that Max often leaves it up to the stewards to decide. The thing is, in this instance, Max knows the rules, but now so does Oscar Piastri. And I think he was doing what Max would have done. And in that case, it is what it is. And again, roles reversed. Max would have done the same thing. Oscar would receive the penalty and I would have understood. It's just gray area of all of us debating of who was right, who was wrong, who has wheel knowledge and who doesn't. When really the only people who should be having this conversation with us are the stewards and they're not having it. We're kind of just diddly daddling up here in what we know world.
Right.
And what we're, the criteria that we think that the driving standards are. It's like a lot of, we're trying to do our best. And yeah, all the hot takes will prevail because people love clicking on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this 5-second penalty definitely did make or break the race. I mean, for Max specifically.
No, 100%.
Really quickly, yeah, when asked about the penalty as well, Verstappen then responded, anything I say, it might get me in trouble. Look, and I understand people might be taking that as him being petty. To me, this is another nuanced conversation of him also saying that he can't even freely talk about it. Like, he can't even be petty because the FIA, he will get in trouble.
Right.
And I do think we need to have more of these conversations of drivers being like, no, I'm not going to say anything about this because I might get in trouble. Because that's the way it's talked about and stuff. So it's unfortunate that kind of standing up to the rules is hidden behind this whatever Oscar Piastri corner, not corner, 5-second thing. Right. The drivers cannot just speak freely on what they're talking about. But
well, I mean, we see this in a lot of other sports where both coaches and players aren't allowed to be critical of the ref's decisions. So,
sure. Jazz Chisholm of the New York Yankees recently got a one game ban because, I mean, he live tweeted during the race. During the game, which he's not allowed to do. You're not allowed to have to do that or criticize. Could he have done it later and less and like more subtle? Probably. Yeah, you're not allowed to critique. But to say, like, hey, I disagree with this,
yeah,
can't even say that. So
yeah.
That and it sucks that kind of standing up to the rules and trying to make a point is also hidden behind this controversy of who was right, who was wrong, trying to make a corner. I think we really need to be talking about both fan groups, McLaren, Verstappen, whatever, is consistency and clarity on what the rules are so we don't have these crazy conversations every single time.
Right. Yeah. Let's talk Ferrari. Lewis Hamilton's clearly frustrated. Hamilton was asked if there were some positives he could take from his second stint on after his tire stop and whether he was more comfortable with the car, to which he just said, no, there was not 1 second I was comfortable, then expanded. Well, clearly the car is capable of being P3, so Charles did a great job today, so I can't blame my performance on the car entirely. Lewis Hamilton was clearly frustrated.
Yeah.
I know a lot of that might, it has to do with the growing pains of adjusting to a new team, adjusting to a new car that drives differently, that has different, like, you know, ticks and nuances. But, you know, I hope he's able to sort of figure that out pretty soon.
Yeah, he mentioned he tried to change the car to suit his traditional style, but he said now it's about adapting the way he's driving. But can he? He's been set in his ways for so long, as you mentioned. I do want to give a quick shout-out to Charles Leclerc. He managed his 26-lap mediums beautifully. Mm-hmm. Degradation wasn't an issue, which that's a whole thing with Pirelli that we've been talking about. Bring back the rainbow Pirellis. But his degradation was less, as in not as bad, as Verstappen's and Piastri's that were on the hard, which is crazy. Like, he really did so well with those mediums. And Ocon, honestly, he was one of the top four with the best degradation, or, like, lack thereof degradation. He was on 47-lap old hards.
Wild.
And he barely had any degradation. Top four times.
Impressive. Anything else you want to talk about Ferrari before we move on?
Nope.
Go Charles Leclerc. Great drive from him. McLaren. Let's talk about them again. Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris are now at equal. Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris are now equal on career Grand Prix wins with 5 apiece. Understandably,
it's just hard to compare.
Yes,
people, people are using all of Lando Norris's career, which isn't fair to Oscar Piastri's, considering 1-3 versus 7. Norris had had the drive, not as good.
100% fans will know. When he started at McLaren, the car was not as competitive as it has been the last 2 years, for sure.
Yeah, so it's definitely hard to compare apples to apples, which is really difficult when people have these conversations. But it is great to see Oscar Piastri climbing up quickly, as well as Norris locking in. Hopefully, again, I was just waiting for Norris not to make those mistakes that he does. But great comeback drive. You mentioned this earlier. Finishing P4 from P10. I'm sure that shunt was like on his mind. It's just he had to fix the car. So shout out to the McLaren engineers and the team for doing that super quickly and not having to change anything that wasn't within the FIA regulations. Mm-hmm. So they didn't take another penalty from starting the pits or anything. Shunt wasn't too bad. I must be on the wrong side of social media because I'm not seeing more about his drive, whether this has to be like my algorithm and I got to take charge of my own algorithm, but with dirty air issues. And yeah, I know McLaren has a great car. He put his head down. He drove. His radio was at a minimum. If you look at the transcript, they just did what they had to do. Got to P4.
I think it's too early to sensationalize Lando Norris's situation right now. I think the media very much wants to be like, crisis of confidence. Is he losing it? Like, is Piastri now the number one driver?
Which is wild.
I think it's way too early to make those kind of claims and make those kind of speculations. And also, I think Lando Norris should be incredibly happy with the race that he had. Not the quality, of course, but the race itself, despite the fact that Piastri is now in the lead for the championship. He had an incredible comeback drive from P10 to P4, especially given how hard it is driving these cars in this dirty air this season.
Absolutely agree. I think McLaren should be really proud of themselves. They had a fun interview with like Lando interviewing Piastri. And
kind Lando,
of,
like, you said Leclerc, Lando.
Oh, did I say Leclerc? Oh, I definitely meant Lando.
Yeah.
They had a great Lando interviewing Piastri at the end of it, and it was like a fun social media bit. I loved it. So hopefully they can continue this in Miami.
Yeah, my question is, if McLaren does not declare a number one driver, could we have a repeat of 2007? Of course, 2007 was when Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton were teammates. It was a very tense, tumultuous relationship. Both drivers were in contention for the World Drivers' Championship. They both tied for second place with the same amount of points and ended up losing out the World Drivers' Championship by 1 point to Ferrari's Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah, some might say that was partially also Alonso's fault.
Yeah, for sure.
I absolutely love Fernando Alonso, but I also know his attitude towards things. But he's definitely one of those great driver, diehard, gonna give it all on the track. I mean, if we do see a repeat of 2007, we're in for a heck of a show. Does that hurt McLaren? Like, yeah, absolutely, if they're gonna 100%. Be fighting like that. But it'd be great. For example, for the Verstappen Oscar situation, what if it was Oscar Lando? I'm nervous to even think about what would have happened on social media, the explosion of who pushed who and what was going on there. So
right.
Again, as long as it's consistent, I'm fine with it. But we need to be consistent. I'd love to see it.
For their sake, though, I do think maybe, 10 races in, halfway through the season, McLaren does need to make a decision, I think.
They're still pretty possibly. Close. We gotta get more races, like you said, halfway through. So
I agree, but I do think eventually they need to make a decision on who they're going to prioritize.
Yeah.
Mercedes, a 5-6 finish for Mercedes. Again, like Ash has been saying all season, incredibly consistent. However, Mercedes was not happy with this finish. Toto Wolff post-race said the tires were massively overheating. I imagine, as a casual fan, this was a combination of the high temperatures in Jeddah and Pirelli going with the softer compound. I know I'm being kept in obvious here, but also in the last couple of years, the Mercedes car has tended to perform better in cooler temperatures, which was not the case in Jeddah because it was hot, hot, hot with 91 degrees Fahrenheit at night, right?
Yeah, Russell was just doing his best. Yeah. He could have finished on the podium, but you mentioned the tires to maintain the pace to P3. They actually had pretty bad tire wear. The Mercs, I was wondering what was happening with them. They're just not doing well. Yeah. I do think it's a Mercedes problem, not a tire problem. As we said about other cars, personally, as we saw, other drivers and cars were able to handle Charles Leclerc in the mediums, Ocon on the hards. You had all these different cars being able to manage these tires. I'm over here thinking we need to go even softer. Bring back the rainbow Pirellis. If you know, you know. So I think they were one of the few teams, I think it was just them and Williams potentially, or maybe just Mercedes, to not bring upgrades or changes to this weekend. They looked strong during free practice and qualifying, which is one thing, but you get in the race and then you're affected by the different kind of track, the dirty air, the temperature, et cetera. And then you didn't change anything from previous. It's an interesting choice. So yeah. I do think it's a Merc problem, the car itself, not specifically a Pirelli problem, because Pirelli has been, again, their tires are doing too well. And that's a thing that I hope they go down a step. They are going down a step softer from Miami from last year. I believe that their new super aggressive C6 compound is going to show up for the GP next month in Italy. So interesting to see what that impact brings. But if that doesn't do anything, we gotta think about some deeper ways to stop having one-stop races.
Yeah. But again, like we said, George Russell had the race position to finish on the podium, but just didn't really have the tires to maintain it. And of course, that's why Charles Leclerc ended up overtaking him for P3. Williams, great weekend for Williams. Yeah. Double points, P8 for Carlos Sainz, P9 for Alex Albon. Sainz is crushing it. Williams is now in fifth place with 25 points. Haas is in sixth with 20 points. So Williams,
I like this back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it as well. Williams is now officially the best of the rest. Must feel good for James Vowles and everybody at Williams. I'm excited to see how they're able to carry this momentum into Miami, which is on May 4th, 2 weeks.
Yeah. So our next episode this week, we'll talk about some other racing. But yeah, we won't have to preview Miami right away.
Yeah, so we have a week off before the Miami Grand Prix on May 4th. May the 4th be with you. So later this week, we'll talk about some F1 headlines as well as doing a review of the 6 hours of Imola, part of WEC, the World Endurance Championship. And please join us. We'd love to have you also, again, if you like what you're hearing, please leave a comment.
Yeah, have a discussion. You don't have to like it. You just have a discussion.
Y'all, thank you so much for listening to the WTF1 podcast. I am James Coker along with Ash Van Delay. Please join us later this week. We're going to be talking about 6 hours of Imola along with some F1 headlines. And we will, see you out there. You know,
support
just
local.
Support local racetracks. Help control the pet population. Have your pet spayed or neutered. And we will see you later this week.
Bye.
Bye.